Crime, Wine, and Chaos contains adult language and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, you cool cats and chaos kids. I'm Amber.
And I'm Naomi. This is Crime, Wine, and Chaos. Oh, that was good.
Thank you, sister.
Hi, oh my sissy, God. How are
Hi.
You?
Oh, it's so fucking hot.
Oh, right, because you don't have... Right. Mm. Your house is hot. I'm so sorry. I'm climate controlled. I've been in my apartment all day, so...
I love that for you.
I mean, look.
Tell me.
I just had more days than I have had in a really long time over the last couple of weeks where I just cannot even. And so I don't.
That's good for you.
I mean, I don't know. Is it good?
I don't know. It's your mind and body's way of saying that you need a break.
Probably. Maybe. I don't know. Some of it is like feels like what we say in recovery, which is like I am really feeling the dis-ease, right? Mm. Which is the clever way to say that we have a disease, right? So like the disease of dis-ease, which is that kind of like not comfortable in my own skin, not satisfied, I'm not settled, I'm, you know, like.
I do know. Yeah, that's a lousy feeling to have.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Some of it's a little bit of that like burnout, like right on the edge of burnout from like, you know, 3.5 years of startup life, just relentless stress. So, I told you I was at the spa a couple weeks ago and I get my massages once a month now. And I'm trying, sissy.
No, I get it. You're doing better than me. I have said a million times, like, I need to work that into, like, my normal self-care. And then it's like, okay, as soon as I have time, I'm going to schedule a massage. Mm. Like, I'm not even finding time to schedule it. Like, how am I going to go to it?
So you know what I did is that I went and got a massage a couple months ago or a few months back, whatever it was, after I did all that travel. Remember, I did like tons of travel, right? Mm-hmm. And I came back, I scheduled a massage at this place I've been to a few times. It's near my house. And when I got there and I checked in, they were like, oh, we see that the last time you were here was August, which was like last year, right? And I was like, that's a long time. And, they have this deal that I've never done where you can sign up to be a member and you get like at a discounted rate, you basically pay a monthly payment to them automatically. And it's basically the cost of a massage, right?
Oh.
And so you get like a treatment because they also do facials and other things like that. So that monthly fee gets you like a facial or a massage or whatever once a month at that discounted rate. And then you could book other services at discounted rates because you're a member or whatever. But because now it automatically comes out of my bank account, I am compelled to use it because I'm not going to spend like whatever it is, $90 or $100 a month and like not do the thing, right? Mm-hmm. So now
it sort of forces your hand.
It forces my hand. And now what I'm doing is what I do for like my hair appointments, which is like I go in and I have my massage. And then when I go to the counter to check out and like tip my masseuse, I schedule my next massage for the following month, like right there on the spot. So it's just, it's like, it's now it's built in, sissy. It's built in.
That's brilliant. Also, I love automagically.
Yes.
All right.
I do so as much in my life. Yes, I do it. Look, anything you can do in your life that is just automagical, do it. Just do that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like the cleaning people. They're automagical now.
God, I want cleaning people so bad.
I want that for you too.
Thank you.
Sister, what are you drinking tonight?
Thank you for asking. I'm drinking a F. Stephen Miller Pinot from Santa Barbara County. It's a red.
Are we sure it's Stephen or is it Stefan?
Well, you know what? It's spelled PH, so it's probably Stefan. we did this already.
We did do this already.
And we concluded that it was Stefan.
I think you decided. Yeah, you decided.
Okay. Well, I'm going to decide again. F. Stefan Miller. That's what I'm drinking tonight.
A chilled white. A chilled white on this hot, hot July day.
No, it's a red.
Oh! Oh, what are you doing with your life, sister?
Listen, I just prefer red and...
I know.
Nothing's going to chill this body down at this point. I might as well just go with it.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Well,
do
sister,
you have some crime?
I do. Yes, yes. Mm. Yes, I do. I have a crime. And first off, this one, we got to do a shout out. Again, the great Jen B sending over the crime that had to be told. It's a little bit more, there's more resolution than the Arpana story. So that at least. It's also sort of local-ish.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm going to tell you about the murder of Nikki Kuhnhausen. Have you heard about this?
No.
Okay. It's fairly recent. Nikki Kuhnhausen was born July 6th.
Oh,
2001.
So young.
Yeah. Hella was born July 7th, remember? And we recorded on July 7th. My birthday is the 12th. It's like there's something going on. It is cancer season. It is cancer season.
It really is.
Okay. So she was born July 6th to mom Lisa Woods, and she grew up with her older brothers, Conrad and Alex, in Vancouver, Washington.
Okay.
Lisa and Nikki had an unbreakable bond ever since Nikki was born. They were just super tight. Nikki and her mom were really, really close. Lisa describes Nikki as sassy. She remembers Nikki crawling around her ankles while Lisa would be putting her makeup on, and Nikki's brothers are out playing with like their robot toys or whatever. And Nikki would crawl out of the bathroom with makeup on, and her brothers would yell, "Mom, why did you do that to Nikki again?" And the mom and Lisa would tell them, "I didn't. She did that to herself." Nikki was assigned male at birth, but before she could even walk, Nikki was drawn to makeup and Barbies and high heels, and it was just clear that Nikki was not a boy.
Right.
So by the time Nikki reached middle school, she'd left any trace of her assigned gender from birth, like behind her.
Okay.
What's so awesome is that Lisa says they had no gay people or queer folks around them in their life anywhere. And here they had Nikki just becoming the girl she was meant to be. And Lisa and her and Nikki's brothers, Alex and Conrad, they just went with it. They loved her. And this is just who Nikki was.
Oh, that's awesome. She's lucky. Or
very.
Yeah. It's how it should be.
Right. I was going to say she shouldn't be considered lucky. This is just how it should be. Yeah, exactly. So for those that aren't familiar with the Pacific Northwest, Vancouver sits right on the border between Washington State and Oregon, just across the Columbia River from Portland. It's considered almost like a suburb of Portland, kind of like how Bellevue is to Seattle, sort of, right?
Right. Yeah.
A fair number of folks live in Vancouver and work in Portland. They drive across they go over the bridge over the river to Portland for work. And like a lot of communities outside of purportedly liberal coastal cities around here, Vancouver isn't nearly as progressive a place as its next door neighbor across the river.
Right. God, it's amazing how that happens when it's a stone's throw away.
Right? It's so weird.
It's like Eastern Washington is a different planet than Seattle.
Yes. If you go to the other side of the mountains, you've literally just gone to a whole other...
The deep south or something.
Yeah. Yes.
What?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes.
God. Wow.
So Nikki came of age in the social media era, and she was all about it. By the age of 14, she was jumping on Snapchat and Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and of course, TikTok. She was on a journey of self-discovery, and she had a lot of people on social media that wanted to go on that journey with her. She had thousands of followers on all the platforms.
Wow.
She also had many friends who all described her as cheerful and caring and full of energy. She was the lively friend, the fun friend. She was bright and confident. She was funny, and she was gorgeous. You can take one look at her on any of her posts and know that this is a vibrant young woman.
Mm-hmm.
She was super into makeup, and her dream was to become a stylist for Nicki Minaj, who she idolized. And a bunch of her TikTok content was her lip syncing to Nicki Minaj songs.
Oh, that's awesome.
So on June 5th, 2019, Nicki calls her mom at 8:34 p.m. and she tells Lisa that she is at a friend's house. Later, at 11 p.m., Lisa calls Nicki because she always calls Nicki at 11. Nicki doesn't answer, but she texts her mom and says, "I love you, mommy." Mm. So Lisa tells Nicki, she texts her back and says, "I have to be at work at 2. After Lisa gets off work the next morning, she looks at her thread with Nicki and realizes that last text that she sent about going to work at 2 was unread by Nicki.
Oh, no.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
So Lisa calls Nicki, who doesn't pick up, and she leaves a message, you know, like, "I need to talk to you. Where are you?" No response from Nicki.
And this is, she needs to go to work at 2 a.m.?
I think so. Yeah, I think she works great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay.
And the way she described her getting off her shift at one point in this Hulu series that I watched, she talks about, it looked like she worked as a cashier at a Walmart or something where it like open 24 hours. So her big brother, Conrad, he knows something's not right. There's no way that Nicki would just not reply to mom, right? It would never happen. And so Lisa's calling and calling, and it's just going to voicemail, and she's getting really worried. Not only that, but in the early morning hours of the 6th, even before Lisa is trying to reach her and her concern for Nicki is growing, Nikki's online community is also concerned. A bunch of them notice her absence as well.
Oh, she's on there that frequently that they already are like, "Where are you?"
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So Lisa calls the police to file a missing persons report. She tells them that Nicki is either being held against her will or she is dead. Like, this is not someone who just runs off. And the police, of course, are telling her not to jump to worst case scenarios. And Lisa is trying to tell them, "No, we need to jump. You need to understand." But 4 days goes by with nothing. No news, no follow-up from the police. The Vancouver Police Department did recognize that while many LGBTQIA plus teens go missing or run away because of unsupportive homes and families, Nicki was not in that position. She clearly had a very loving and supportive family and a close relationship with her mom. And so they also recognized that her social media presence was as such that her lack of online activity was a big red flag. So all that said, they did concede that investigating needed to happen, but they didn't have any leads at all on where she could be or what may have happened to her.
Right.
Taylor Watts, who is Nicki's best friend, she jumped in to help find Nicki any way she could. She had a group chat, a Facebook post. They went on the news. She and Nicki's other friends and family posted flyers all over Vancouver and Portland. And then messages did start to pour in. You know, like, "I saw her. She was here. She was there." But none of these tips lead to anything, right?
Yeah.
7 days after Nicki disappeared, on the 13th of June, the first major clue for investigators is discovered, and it's related to her Snapchat account. Lisa contacts the police department and tells them that Nicki had been staying with a couple of friends, Faith and Tiffany, at an apartment in Vancouver. Faith and Tiffany agreed to go speak with detectives, and Faith tells police that Nicki borrowed her phone that night to log into Snapchat and talk to a man who she went to meet up with a few hours later. And then Nicki logged back out of Faith's phone, like out of her account from Faith's phone.
So she's pretending to be Faith, or like what?
No,
was the
she purpose? Logged into her Snapchat on Faith's mm-hmm. phone.
Hmm.
So like maybe her phone died.
Okay. Okay.
So now police have, so they have to go get a search warrant to get Nicki's Snapchat records, right? It's the only way they can gain access to her private Snapchat stuff. And after sending the search request to Snapchat, they had to wait for weeks.
Weeks?
Mm-hmm. And finally, Snapchat comes through and investigators do get a name.
Okay.
David Bogdanov. Nicki and Bogdanov had been chatting the night she went missing. Bogdanov sent Nicki an address and said, "White van, LOL." And it appeared they were arranging to meet up.
God, white van. Can it be mm-hmm. any more fucking dark and cliche than that?
How many times are we going to do this? Yeah. So Snapchat also recorded the approximate GPS location of Bogdanov's phone. And as he was Snapchatting, he was outside Nicki's apartment picking her up.
Oh.
or her friend's apartment where Nikki was, right? So Nikki's bestie, Taylor, she'd never heard of this guy. In fact, none of Nikki's friends or family had ever heard her talk about this guy. He's a complete stranger.
Oh, no. That's creepy.
Mm-hmm. Police start digging to find out what they can about this guy. He's 25. He comes from a very large Russian family, lots of brothers and sisters. His family had a construction business that he also worked in. He had no criminal history and had nothing in his background that investigators would consider a red flag.
Okay.
He's definitely a person of interest, though. Police tried many times to get a hold of this guy, and he was not returning their calls or getting back to them. They literally, like, texted him, called him, left business cards. A week of this goes by with no successful contact with David. So then they start to track down his family. So first they go to one of his brothers, Artur, who claims David is out backpacking and he has no idea when David will be back.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So next they contact another brother, Stan. He was kind of nervous and he said he didn't really remember if he had seen David or not on the night of Nikki's disappearance. And when they asked Stan about Bogdanov being out backpacking, Stan seemed a bit surprised that it was even a suggestion that he would be backpacking.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Now the cops are wondering if one of these brothers was involved or knew what had happened, since they had conflicting stories and Stan seemed so anxious while talking to police.
Yeah.
They kept trying to track down Bogdanov, and time continues to pass. And finally, police decide they're going to message him on Snapchat.
Oh.
It's now September 5th. Nikki has been missing for 3 months.
Oh, my God. What the fuck?
I know.
Oh.
He definitely read the message, but he did not respond to it. And this guy is just nowhere to be found.
Doesn't Snapchat have the location capability?
Yeah, but I don't know if they have enough to, like, get another warrant from Snapchat to, like, track him.
Right, right.
Right? So a week later, September 12th, police sent him another message on Snapchat. And this time he actually responds the next day. And on October 2nd, 2019, he finally agrees to speak with the detectives on Nikki's case. She's been missing for 4 months.
God, you piece of shit.
Okay. According to Bogdanov, he met Nikki in downtown Vancouver. And literally that's where he met her. The very first time. And they started a conversation. He said he gave her his coat and then they parted ways.
Okay.
Like, she was cold. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Later, she reached out to him on Snapchat, which is when they made arrangements to meet up. He said they went to hang out with his brothers, which the brothers both say they didn't know if they saw Bogdanov and Nikki that night. And then Bogdanov said the thing that made them all raise their eyebrows. Nikki told him that she was trans, and he immediately told her to get out of his car.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. This is a quote from a recording of this interview from Bogdanov. It's even disturbing when I'm around a gay person or somebody bi. I just got disgusted, and I just asked her to just get out. For me, it's just very disturbing and disgusting when people are like this. And that's it. That's where we parted ways. I went on to go to my brother's job site. From there, went to work. I wish I could help you more, but I'm not a kind of person to... I'm not even a violent person.
Mm-hmm. Not a violent person, just hates a whole group of people.
Yep. But even with everyone's spidey senses tingling, there isn't much more investigators can do. There is no body, no evidence beyond the Snapchat conversation between Bogdanov and his statement that they did meet and parted ways. So they had to let him walk. 2 months later, December 7th, 2019, 6 months since Nikki went missing, a hiker out foraging in the forest discovers what he believes are human remains near a logging road on Larch Mountain, northeast of Vancouver, in an area frequented by target shooters and hunters. What he discovered were just bones. Of course, this makes it really hard to put together what happened to this person. Investigators spend 2 days at and around the site of this discovery, scouring the area for anything that might be connected to these bones. There's not much left of the body that can be used to make an identification, but based on items found scattered around it, they were pretty sure they had found Nikki.
Oh, God.
Jewelry and clothing that matched up with things that belonged to Nikki, as well as black hair extensions with a white stripe and a very distinctive high-vis yellow windbreaker type jacket that matched up with images found on Nikki on her social media.
Oh, no.
A forensic examination confirmed they were indeed the remains of Nikki Kuhnhausen. Of course, her family and her friends were absolutely devastated by this news. Mm-hmm. The Justice for Nikki Task Force was formed in late December as a direct response to this tragedy. The trans community and their allies were spurred to action by yet another trans person being murdered for being who they are.
God damn it.
Their goal was to make sure that Nikki's murderer was brought to justice and also to make sure that this issue got the awareness it needs and deserves. Mm-hmm. Transgender people are 4 times more likely than cisgender people to become the victim of a violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
40% of all youth experiencing homelessness are LGBTQ identified, while only about 4% of the total population are LGBTQ identified.
God, it's awful.
While statistics and data around the transgendered and non-binary community are unreliable because it's dangerous to be either and there aren't a lot of reliable agencies tracking this data, we do know through self-reporting that statistics documenting transgender people's experience of sexual violence indicate shockingly high levels of sexual abuse and assault.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 2 transgender individuals are sexually abused or assaulted at some point in their lives.
1 in 2?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Some reports estimate that transgender survivors may experience rates of sexual assault up to 66%, often coupled with physical assaults or abuse. This indicates that the majority of transgender individuals are living with the aftermath of trauma and the fear of possible repeat victimization. So it's like, it's not just, you know, hard enough to like, you know, grow up and go mm-hmm. through puberty, but to then grow up and go through puberty while figuring out like your gender identity is not what you were assigned at birth. Like all of that is like plenty.
Correct.
But like, yeah. Let's just throw all of this other bullshit on top of that. Like, let's just go on like extra hard mode, right?
Yeah. Jesus. God.
So everyone wanted answers. Who did this? What happened? How did she die? One of the pieces of evidence collected near her remains was a phone charging cord. This cord was basically tied in a knot.
Mm.
In the middle of that knot was hair and tiny bone fragments.
Oh, no.
Based on this, the medical examiner ruled Nikki's death homicide and the likely method as strangulation.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Bogdanov is still their most obvious suspect, but Nikki's family tells police about an incident from a year prior in late February of 2018. Nikki had been shot 6 times and was rushed to the hospital.
What? Holy shit.
Lisa had gotten the call when she was about to get off shift at work. Nikki had bullet wounds in her calf, thigh, 2 in the stomach, 1 in her neck, and 1 in her hand.
Oh my God.
Nikki had been shot at point blank range in a car and pushed out onto the street.
Oh.
The perpetrator drove off. Nikki crawled to the closest house, but they wouldn't open the door for her. So she crawled to another house, and that's the last thing that Nikki remembered. But Nikki never told anyone who had shot her. She would just say, "He'll get his when he gets his."
Whoa.
So the police closed that case without any further investigation because Nikki wouldn't tell them anything.
I don't think that's how investigations are supposed to work, but okay.
Well, yeah, Vancouver. So was this the same person that came back to finish what they started? Maybe. But this is a dead end because there's no way to find out who this was.
Yeah.
So back to Bogdanov. He was still assumed to be the last person to see Nikki alive. Police obtained a search warrant for Bogdanov's cell phone data, and they dig into his GPS data. And sure enough, his phone, at least, was up there on Larch Mountain the day that Nikki went missing.
Uh-huh. Of course it was.
So it's time for him to answer some more questions.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators sit him in an interrogation room and ask him if he wants to revise his statement about his whereabouts the night Nikki went missing. And he goes, "I mean, I might have stopped by the gas station."
This guy's such a fucking idiot.
The investigators all, "At the time we talked before, I didn't have the benefit of having access to your phone records. Your phone went east out past Larch Mountain."
Mm-hmm.
And then they both just sit there saying nothing for like a long time.
Just like it's getting like, awkward. Like,
yes. And Bogdanov occasionally like shakes his head. He's sitting in like full man spread with his legs wide and his elbows are on his knees and his hands are clasped together, right? Like dude's wearing all black, like athleisure plus like a black beanie, leaned forward with like this grim face. And the detective is kind of smirking and sit back with his arms crossed, just staring at him.
Yeah. Like a gotcha. Also in this day and age, he doesn't know that that's right? Like, Oh my God. There's right? just no excuse for that. Yeah.
So the detective says, you didn't just go to work, did you? And Bogdanov says he needs to talk to a lawyer and the interview is over. And then David Bogdanov is arrested for the murder of Nikki Kuhnhausen.
Good.
He entered a plea of not guilty, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Bogdanov's trial began August 16th, 2021. A lot of people expected Bogdanov to use the trans panic defense, which is just another version of the gay panic defense.
Yes. Fuck right off.
Fuck right off. This is from Movement Advancement Project, or MAP, which is an independent nonprofit think tank that provides rigorous research, insight, and communications that help speed equality and opportunity for all. Quote, the so-called gay and trans panic defenses are legal strategies which, according to the American Bar Association, seek to partially or completely excuse crimes such as murder and assault on the grounds that the victim's sexual orientation or gender identity is to blame for the defendant's violent reaction. Research by the Williams Institute shows that no state recognizes gay and trans panic defenses as freestanding defenses under their respective penal codes, but defendants have used panic defenses in conjunction with other defense strategies to attempt to reduce the severity of their charges or sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
Their defenses are based on irrational fears and prejudice toward LGBTQ people, and they imply that violence against LGBTQ people is acceptable or understandable under certain conditions.
Exactly.
The American Bar Association issued a unanimous resolution in 2013 calling on federal, tribal, state, local, and territorial governments to prohibit the use of this defense, but many states still permit this practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that, like, that somebody's identity is reason enough to murder or assault them mm-hmm. is like, that would be like having a black panic defense.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is yes. exactly like that.
Yes. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting.
Unbelievable. So the defense presents their opening statement, and it was actually crazier than trans panic.
Oh, God.
His defense attorney said, quote, our client did not strangle Nikki Kuhnhausen, causing her death because she's transgender. Nikki Kuhnhausen is now deceased because Mr. Bogdanov had to defend himself against her attacking him and possibly killing him.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yep. This guy came in hot at trial, not at any point prior to trial, with the I did it in self-defense excuse.
God damn it.
And everyone is just like, what the fuck? This guy is big. He's not a small mm-hmm. dude. And Nikki weighed like nothing. She was tiny. No mm-hmm. one was buying this nonsense that he would need to defend himself against her.
No shit. God, this guy's a piece of shit.
So the good part is this took a big burden off the prosecution, that of proving he was the murderer. This self-defense defense means he's admitted to killing Nikki.
Mm-hmm.
Now it becomes, do we believe he was justified? On August 24th, a week into the trial, the defense calls David Bogdanov to the stand.
Oh, no.
Which he's is insane, testifying. Right?
Come on.
Yes. Everyone knows you don't testify in your own murder trial.
No, you do not. All right. I love
like,
that
whose
he's
idea
doing this.
Was this?
Probably his.
Do you think it was?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. His story changed. He did admit that after he picked Nikki up in his van, they did get into the back and start messing around, that she performed oral sex on him. And it is during this encounter that he puts his hands into Nikki's pants and realizes she is trans.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, I freak out. And so I said, she's a disgusting, disgusting piece of crap. I shove her kind of hard and trying to push her back to her driver's seat and tell her to just get the fuck out of my car. His attorney asks, okay, then what does she do? Quote, at that time, she just jumps up and gets toward the center console towards my gun. So the prosecution's surprised. He admits to having a gun when there had been no indication that a gun had ever been involved.
Right.
And so he claims she was attacking him and he was trying to restrain her. And he saw the cell phone cord that he says was pre-tied, like the knot was already there, guys. And he thought that was a good way to restrain her. And I guess he like wrapped it around her body, but it slid up to her neck and that that somehow she died.
That is not a fucking thing. It slid up. Oh my God. I hate this guy.
Let's all just take a minute to remind ourselves that it takes 5 to 10 minutes to strangle someone to death.
Uh-huh. Yep.
But yeah, he just whoopsie-daisied that.
He whoopsie-daisied that. And I always store my phone cord charger in a knot. always.
Right. No, it's always got a knot in it. That's for good luck.
This guy is so fucking stupid.
What? Exactly. I know your face right now.
I have no words. I hate this guy.
So even though it was just his word on what happened, his other actions and lack of actions said plenty. He didn't try to resuscitate Nikki after accidentally strangling her, nor did he call 911 to get help for her.
Right.
And then there's the whole like dumping her body in the middle of nowhere thing.
Correct.
And one other little detail that came out while he was telling his version of events. He says that they started out in his white van and then they switched into a gold Audi. And this is where this encounter actually happened, was in the Audi.
Okay.
And apparently he called a guy to go pick up that Audi and, quote, get rid of it.
What?
Yes. So he admitted on the stand that he accidentally killed somebody in this other vehicle that he literally said on the stand that he went to lengths to have it disposed of.
This guy is so fucking stupid. Is his attorney just like, what are you doing?
I mean, what he's got to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 3 days after this fucking idiot piece of shit testified in his own defense, on August 27th, 2021, the verdict came in. David Bogdanov was found guilty of murder in the second degree and malicious harassment. Malicious harassment is basically a hate crime charge enhancement. Hmm. He was sentenced to 19 and a half years, which was the maximum sentencing allowed for these charges, partly because this is Bogdanov's first offense. He could get out in 17 years with good behavior.
Wow. Wow.
So Nikki's family and the Justice for Nikki Task Force went to work to change the law in Washington State through the Nikki Kuhnhausen Act, which eliminates the gay and trans panic defense officially and legally.
Good.
Currently, only 15 states in the U.S. and Washington, D.C. explicitly ban this defense act.
I feel like then Washington is the old. When I first started this podcast, I did the Jenny Jones murder.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, yes.
And I had put a petition on our socials for people to sign from the American Bar Association to ban the gay trans panic defense. And I feel like so in that time span, we've moved one notch with Washington getting it passed.
Sounds like it. I think that, I mean, well, 2013 is when the American Bar Association basically said, like, we need to do this nationally. This needs to be nationally recognized.
Yeah. God. I mean, it's good that a large majority, but that's not good enough. Why are there 15 only? Are you 15 that ban it or 15 that have it?
15 that ban it.
Oh, yeah. That's
there
not
are
even
35 enough. States and like five U.S. territories that are part of the United States that do not explicitly ban the gay and trans panic defense.
Okay. That's disgusting. We need to do better.
It's super disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see pictures of Nikki, and her mom and her brothers, like it just breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's so senseless. It's so. And it's not like this whole notion of calling it like panic phobia. It's fucking bullshit. That's not what it is. It's hatred. Mm-mm. It's bigotry. Those are not the same thing.
They are not even the same thing. No, no.
They're not afraid.
Mm-mm.
There was nothing to fear from Nikki.
Not at all. And I mean, I don't want to jump out of my lane, but my limited understanding of trans kids, particularly, especially if they have really outstanding parents like Nikki did, is safety for those kinds of situations is really taught. So I find it very hard to believe that if she found herself in that situation, that she would be going for a gun or fighting back or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I'm sure she knows. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, 100%. It's like
the
how
dangers
women,
for her
it's
are.
Just like women know what the dangers are in situations with men, right? Where it's like, okay, how do I get out of this alive?
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, 100%. Yes,
some
absolutely.
Huge dude is pissed at me. I'm not going to kick the hornet's nest. I'm going to do whatever I can to just get out of there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's just bullshit. It's just bullshit.
Well, I mean, of course it's bullshit. Everything he said was fucking bullshit. That guy was just 100% bullshit.
God, fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. God bless Nikki's mom and her brothers and her friends and her allies and for changing the law in Washington State. I can feel a little bit better about that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's thanks for that, Jen.
God, Jen.
Seriously.
God, she's a Jenny Downer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love you, Jen. All right. Hey, I'm just gonna do the take two slap and then we'll go right into chaos.
Okay. All right. Okay. Chaos. Are you ready?
Give it to me, sister. Oh, I'm so ready.
Give it to me, baby. Okay.
I need it.
I'm gonna tell you about the Harvey's Casino bombing. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay, great. Okay. So we're going to August 26, 1980.
Okay.
In the wee morning hours, a couple of delivery dudes brought in a large piece of equipment that said IBM on it into Harvey's Resort Hotel in Lake Tahoe, Nevada.
I was going to say, we're going to Tahoe, I think. Yes. Okay. Tahoe's beautiful, by the way. Have you ever been?
I want to go.
Tahoe is great. Tahoe is fantastic. I highly recommend Tahoe.
I want to see Tahoe. Yeah. So it was taken to the second floor offices and then they left. They dropped it off and left. Within an hour, the night manager notices the equipment and doesn't know what it is. So he asks a few other employees if they know what this thing is and nobody has a clue. So now there's a small group of employees next to this large thing. And one of the employees is even leaning on it. And someone notices, I know, someone notices that there's a note attached to it.
This is before the see something, say something initiative. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're poking at it. What can it be?
Kick it, shake it. Shit. Oh, my God.
Okay. So the note says, quote, stern warning to the management and bomb squad. Do not move or tilt this bomb because the mechanism controlling it detonates when it has any movement of less than 0.1 on the Richter scale. Don't ask me to tell you what measure of movement that is. I don't know.
Okay.
Don't try to flood or gas the bomb. There's a float switch and an atmosphere pressure switch set. Both are attached to detonators. Do not take it apart. The flathead screws are attached to triggers, and as much as a quarter to three quarters of a turn will cause the explosion.
I'm sorry. So this note is telling them all the ways that this thing will detonate if they try to dismantle it.
Yeah.
That's what the note says.
Correct. Like, don't even bother. This thing is... Okay.
Are they still leaning on it, hanging out around it at this point? Yeah,
the guy's like, uh-oh, right? So the note goes on to say that they are requesting a $3 million ransom, and they will receive instructions on how to safely move the bomb out. It's so weird.
I don't even have words for this. This is crazy pants. What?
I know.
In 1980, $3 million is a good chunk of change now. In 1980, $3 million is a lot.
A lot. Yep. Yeah. So the note also said that there is no way to stop the bomb from detonating. Not even the creators know how to do that. And the only way is for it to be safely moved somewhere else so that it can detonate. That's the only way to get rid of it.
Even the people who put it together don't know how to dismantle it safely.
Mm-hmm. It can't. It's not dismantleable.
It has to be like controlled explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Part of me is thinking like it's all bullshit. Like it sounds like it's too perfect. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
Like there's not even a bomb in there. It's just an IBM box full of like cinder
coffee
blocks,
paper.
Right? Or whatever. Yeah, totally. And a note on the outside. And it's scary enough that nobody's going to fuck with it to find out. So it doesn't matter, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, so this bomb later was used in FBI training and teaching models for bomb technicians because it was so sophisticated.
Oh my God. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so it was unlike any bomb the bomb technicians had ever seen. It was stacked boxes separated by metal and rubber that were unable to be separated without it going off, and it had 1,000 pounds of dynamite in it.
No. Did they know for sure? How did they know for sure?
I don't know how they knew for sure, but...
Is that what the note said?
No. That's what the bomb specialist with the FBI determined.
Okay. A thousand pounds. Mm-hmm. Half a ton of dynamite.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I know. That would take down that whole building, right?
Well, we'll get there.
Okay.
It doesn't, but yeah. So the FBI comes in and they gently dust for fingerprints, trying
very
to figure out.
Very gently. The most gentle brushing that's ever been done for fingerprints.
It's like that time when I was like 5 and we stayed at Grandma and Papa's in Ballard, and Papa brushed my hair that was down to my waist with his tiny little black comb.
Out on the stoop, right? We were on the steps. I remember it. And he was like... literally picking up like 3 strands of hair at a time. And like,
oh my God, I sat there for so long,
like 2 hours or something.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. We got there though. That's so cute.
Also, can you imagine being the one
dusting?
Like, yes.
No, so, I, first
Susan,
off, I would
in
be,
there. Susan, I need no. you. Susan, go. We need you to go dust for prints.
Susan's probably in a diaper and actively shitting and dusting. Not kidding.
Actively shitting and dusting.
Yeah.
Vomiting on the side.
Turn away. I can't handle any stimulation.
Hold your breath. I know. And brush.
God, no, this is out of my pay grade. I am sorry.
I mean, what are you going to wear to do? I mean, like, you could put on.
What are you going to wear?
Right? There's no like protection you can put on. Like, a bulletproof vest or whatever. Like, nothing's going to, like, your head is coming off. You know what I'm saying? Like,
this is how stupid I am. I wasn't even thinking you said what to wear. Ooh, bomb dusting. What do I have that goes with bomb dusting? You meant safety gear.
Oh my God. I'm dying.
Oh. God. I'm like, I know, right? Like, what would you wear to that?
You meant safety gear.
I got that. You're right. There's nothing that's going to help. You might as well just look cute. It's the best you can hope for.
You might as well look cute right before you turn into pink mist. Oh, my God.
Okay. So, according to the bomb technicians, everything that was said on this note was true. They studied this bomb for 3 hours and they saw no way of defusing it. The note also specified that they wanted the $3 million in $100 bills used and not marked. They want a helicopter flown to Lake Tahoe Airport and to have the pilot land by the payphone and wait by the payphone for more instructions.
The payphone? Like, which payphone? Like just outside the airport? Like, what?
Okay, that's funny that you say that because it kind of, we'll get there. So,
oh my God. And this, you guys, this was before Blade. So,
right.
They weren't able to just pull up an app on their phone and call for a helicopter. They had to really work for it.
No. Oh, they also said that the creator of the bomb will not be involved in any exchange of the money, and that nobody involved in the money exchange would have any idea how to defuse the bomb. So don't bother trying.
Don't even bother.
Mm-mm. Nope.
It doesn't matter. Nobody knows how to defuse it. Even the people who made it don't know how to defuse it. So it doesn't. No. We've established this. No one can defuse this bomb. It is the perfect bomb.
Oh, God. They said that there would be a total of 6 instructions. The first instruction would be given to the helicopter pilot, and the second set was going to be delivered through the post office.
Good old USPS.
Mm-hmm.
This was back when they were super reliable.
Yeah, but also like, what, you wait like several days at the post office for like snail mail to come
the
in?
The check's already in the mail. You know what I'm saying? Oh. It's already in the mail.
They also said that no media was allowed to know about this until after the bomb was removed. But this didn't happen because the bomb was the bomb was first discovered at 5 a.m. And so by 6 a.m., the guests at Harvey's Resort were woken up and told to evacuate immediately and that there was no time to get any of their belongings. And Harris across... Like,
plus, there was like all those people that like were just hanging around chilling on the box who like ran out of the building and promptly told fucking everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my God. Yeah. The guy leaning on it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a story for the rest of his life.
Oh, for sure. He probably wrote a book. So Harris across the street was also evacuated. And there was no way that a scene this large could be kept from the media, right? They were all sent like in bathrobes and slippers to a nearby high school.
I've stayed at that Harrah's.
You have?
Mm-hmm, that's where we stayed when we went there.
Is it nice?
It's nice. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, when we were there, it was many, many decades later. So I'm sure it had been, you know, it was like probably 20 plus years later. So I'm sure it had been, you know, remodeled or redecorated since then. But yeah, there were two bathrooms. We had two bathrooms in our room.
Ooh, fancy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to go to Tahoe now. So, yeah, so there's a ton of reporters and looky-loos, right?
Sure, sure.
So Harvey's is owned by Harvey Gross. He was the very first casino ever opened in Tahoe in the 40s. And it was like a little cabin called Harvey's Wagon Wheel with six slot machines.
You know what's weird about Tahoe, right?
Hmm.
Well, the city itself is, or the town itself is called State Line, where all the those hotels are and stuff. And it's literally on the state line of Nevada and California. So like there's the road that runs like parallel to the lake, and on either side of that road is where the like the lakeside, the closer to the lakeside would be where Harvey's is, and Harrah's is across this, directly across the street from it. And then right there, there's a cross street, and that is like State Line Road or whatever it's called. And that that road, that intersection is where the line is for the state. So you can be walking down the middle of the little town in front of Harrah's, cross the street, and you're now in California.
Wow.
It's weird.
That's fun.
Yeah,
that's
it is fun.
It's weird.
That's fun.
That's fun. Oh my God.
You got to put Tahoe on your list. That's all I'm saying.
It's on my list. Okay. So his little casino was a huge success, and it turned Tahoe into a tourist spot. And by 1963, he made Harvey's Casino, which was an 11-story casino and at the time the tallest building in Tahoe. He'd had run-ins with the IRS, but nothing serious, and there was no reason for him to have a target on him. Like, by all accounts, he was like a legit dude, a good business person.
I mean, right? It was a casino. That's the only reason to have it. I mean, it's like that. It's literally like all the Ocean's movies are about like robbing casinos because they have the money to rob. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Wasn't Tahoe the place that Dad used to talk about retiring to?
No, that's Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Wyoming.
Tahoe was where they went for their honeymoon.
Do not. No, stay out of Wyoming. There's nothing in Wyoming.
I have heard that Jackson Hole is really beautiful, but like once you see it, like, do you need to live there? No.
Right. In Wyoming? You know? No.
Yeah.
No, no. It's a shithole.
So the FBI decides that they're going to play along, and they're hoping that they're able to drag this out and allow themselves time before the bomb goes off or whatever is going to happen. But Harvey's position that he's not paying shit and the bomb can go ahead and go off.
Just blow up my building. I don't give a fuck. Fuck yeah, Harvey.
Also, it's not going to cost $3 million to rebuild.
No, nope.
You know?
No. Nope.
So anyway, yeah. It's just a smart business move, really.
Sure, sure.
So they decide they're going to...
It's just basic math, Amber. It's just basic math.
Basic math. Basic math. You're right. They're going to do the money drop with fake money. And Harvey even offers up his own helicopter. So the pilot is an FBI agent, and they fly to the airport at the drop spot with a suitcase full of mostly fake money. And when the agent gets there, the payphone rings and the caller says, "Look under the phone."
Shut up.
And under the phone, there's a note, a taped note.
This is like the dumbest Hollywood script I have ever seen. Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
So under the payphone, there's instructions that say to fly west along the highway for 15 minutes, then look for a strobe light in a field and land there to drop the money.
Okay, now we're on like a scavenger hunt. Great.
Yeah. So the pilot goes and follows the instructions, but there's no strobe light in a field. He flies around for 45 minutes and eventually goes back to the payphone at the airport, hoping that they would get a call, but a call never came through and the money.
He's just flying around in this helicopter and landing at the, like on the causeway at the front of the airport in a helicopter.
Yeah. Like, back to the payphone. Like, well, maybe they'll call with more instructions.
What the fuck?
Okay. So the person behind this entire thing is John Waldo Burgess Sr. So he, fucked up by saying to fly for 15 minutes rather than specifying a distance.
Uh-huh.
And on top of that, apparently him and his crew forgot the battery to the strobe light.
I'm getting real like Elmer McCurdy trying to rob a train vibes right now. You know what I mean? Doesn't know how to use nitroglyceride or whatever.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, and because of that, you know, they were driving around everywhere looking for a battery and they eventually found one at a Shell station. By the time they got to the field, the helicopter was gone. They've
come and gone.
Yeah. Guys, so fucking stupid.
Or like, what was that guy and those guys, the Santa Claus bank robber, where they forgot to fill up the gas tank before they robbed the bank?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Just stopping for gas. Okay. So back at the bomb site, shit has turned into a full on block party.
Well, yeah, 100%. I mean, everybody's in their pajamas, right?
Yes. Don't tell the media. It's like a street fair at this point. The police have barricaded off like the area for crowd control, but people are selling t-shirts that say I got bombed at Lake Tahoe. And
okay,
I
that had a- was so fast. This is like Legend of Billie Jean, right? Like all of a sudden we have merch, instant merch. P.S. Did I tell you I bought a Billie Jean shirt? It looks like one of the merch shirts from the fucking movie. Like,
I love that. I know. Instant merch.
It's like, how does that happen? There's a guy with a screen print shop like a couple blocks away and he was just jamming those out like all fucking morning.
Uh-huh. Probably. Another one said, I had a dynamite time at Lake Tahoe.
Oh my God.
Those I want one of those
worth money. I want one bad. I want an original though. Original. Instant merch. Here I thought that the Legend of Billie Jean was full of shit. No, apparently it really did be like that.
Yeah, it'd be that way. So the FBI decide that enough is enough, and they're going to go ahead and give defusing this bomb a try.
Okay.
So the plan is to safely blow the box apart and to do it quick enough that it severs the relay switch before the signal can reach the dynamite.
Okay. I don't understand that, but okay.
Well, neither do I, so please don't ask follow-up questions.
Sounds great. They're the professionals. So, they know what they're trying to do.
So they have an apparatus built specifically for this task, and it's brought to Harvey's. This was now 35 hours since the bomb was discovered.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's enough time to make merch.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Danny Denali is the lucky volunteer to be the one to go in with the charge.
What's he wearing? The latest in bomb dismantling fashion, I assume.
Well, he purchased merch outside. He's wearing that he had a dynamite time in Lake Tahoe. Oh my God. Okay, so he does this and then comes back outside with a remote. There is a countdown that happens. It's broadcasted on the radio. And
everybody's chanting as a crowd together, the countdown. Yep. Mm-mm. I see this movie. I see this movie.
Yeah, so he hits the button and it doesn't work to intercept the bomb and it ends up detonating.
Oh.
So there's a 50-foot hole in the ground and cash and chips are flying everywhere.
This is amazing. And this crowd in their shirts are like running around trying to grab cash.
They're running around yes, in their shirts.
It's raining fucking cash everywhere. This is an 80s movie. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
There's like a band set up. Like, they're oh my rocking God. Out.
So, within a few days, Harvey's was back up and running with a barricade around the bomb hole, and he even advertised and charged visitors to come see the bomb hole.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so the people behind the bomb.
Yeah, how'd they find these guys?
They didn't know that it had gone off.
How did they not know?
They didn't. I don't know where they were. They were still strobe lighting in the field. I don't know. Because after the bomb went off, they called the sheriff's office and tried to arrange for another payment drop.
Oh.
And they were like, yeah, no. Yeah. So who is this John Waldo Burgess Sr.? So according to his son, he was a physically and emotionally abusive husband and father. He was an actual Nazi before coming to the U.S.
Oh, Nazis.
Back Bingo. To the Nazis.
Back Bingo. To the Nazis. Okay. Well mm-hmm. played, sister. Well played.
Thank you. He had a landscaping business in Fresno that did really well, but he also gambled and lost a lot. Mm. He had an estimated loss at Harvey's alone of $750,000.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the years prior, he owned a restaurant that burned down, and it's speculated that he burned it down himself and collected the $350,000 insurance money, which he also gambled away at Harvey's.
Sure, 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 sure.
So he had a bone to pick and wanted to get his money back, you know?
Okay.
And on top of that, a few years back on New Year's Eve, he was given the high roller suite at Harvey's, and he had a lady friend with him. But because he had so much debt, he was removed by staff from the high roller room and into a regular room, which humiliated him.
In front of his lady friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So included in this heist was his girlfriend and two of his three sons. And the bomb delivery people were Bill Brown and Terry Hall. And it was later learned that these two were just like a couple of doofy dudes that were paid $2,000 for the delivery and they had no idea what they were delivering.
Oh my God.
I know.
So who built the bomb?
He never says. So the dynamite was stolen from a power plant in California. It's still unknown how such a sophisticated bomb was made. It is believed that he had help, but he never said. And these guys are fucking driving around without a battery for their strobe light. So
right,
I don't think
that's what I'm saying. So there's some said. Like genius, like mad bomb builder still that was still out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So they were caught because one of the sons had a girlfriend at the time and he couldn't keep his mouth shut and was bragging to her about his bomb plot. And when they broke up, she ended up telling her new boyfriend who then called the FBI.
I mean, you know what? Crime alone, kids. Remember? Crime alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. The sons turned on their dad right away in exchange for leniency. The girlfriend, Ella, got 7 years. She was the one that typed the ransom note, and she was also a driver to the landing sites. John Sr. represented himself in court. mm-hmm. He was given 20 years in federal prison and life without parole in state prison.
What?
Not sure why. The federal prison, I'm imagining, was the making and or delivering the bomb. And the state prison was the, I don't know.
Okay, so he basically had two trials. He had a state trial and a federal trial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he served 20 years in state and then was transferred to the federal prison to serve the rest of his sentence. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's the Harvey Casino bombing. What the fuck?
How have I never heard? That is crazy pants.
No, it's so weird.
It is wild.
I just imagine those dumbasses in a field with a strobe light that won't turn on.
Driving around trying to find a battery. Like, what the fuck, you guys?
Fucking idiots.
So they actually teach this bomb at like to FBI, like bomb or the ATF or whoever, like this is mm-hmm. like the
example.
Perfect bomb. The perfect mm-hmm. bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I don't understand is if if any movement would trip it, how did they even get it in there without tripping it?
I don't know if that was true.
Oh.
I don't, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
1,000 pounds of dynamite.
Of dynamite.
That is insane. God. I just imagine Harvey looking kind of like the like Boss Hogg in Dukes of Hazzard or something. You know what I mean? With like the white cowboy hat and the white, just with like a big belly and like a cigar, just being like, let it blow up. I don't care. And then charging like viewing prices to go see the damage.
Take my helicopter. Go drop off some fake money.
Yes.
It's amazing. He gave zero fucks. Yeah.
It's amazing. And then the street party and the t-shirt, like Insta merch, all of it. It's just, sister, that was the best thing I have heard all week. Thank you much for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm glad I could give you that.
That was amazing. Well, we did it.
We did it.
In the can. You know, the uses for the good of the order. Go follow us on all the things. We're on all the things. I think we're like still slowly working on a TikTok presence.
Yeah, we're ticking the talk a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Go check it out. Crime Wanted Chaos is on TikTok. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at Misnomers. Hey, rate us on your streaming app, wherever you listen to us. Give us a rating. And if you're on an Apple product, go write us a little review. We love that. Or you can send us email. You can, send Amber love letters. You can send me hate mail. They both go to the same email address though. It's crimewineandchaos@gmail.com. And if you want to listen to some bonus content, we drop a bonus episode every month. You can go become a member of the Chaos Kids Club for $5 a month, you guys. Just
$5.
You know, it's like stop getting Starbucks once a month. Just one time a month. And you can come.
Give up a day of avocado toast.
Avocado toast, Starbucks, one of those. One of those can go and you can get an episode that not everybody gets to listen to because not everybody's in the club at Patreon, patreon.com/crimewineandchaos. I think I covered all the things.
Sister. You did wonderfully.
Thank you so much.
Love you.
I love you. And that was really, really fucking
chaotic. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Crime, Wine, and Chaos is produced by 8th Direction Records. Artwork by Joshua M. Davis. Music by Paul Abner. If you would like to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at crimewineandchaos.com/Patreon. Cheers!
Oh, wait a minute. Hold. Okay.
I don't think that's how investigations are supposed to work, but okay.